If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast about the business of entertainment. This is Variety Deputy Music Editor Jem Aswad. There's a good chance you've never heard the name Richard Gotterer, but there's an equally good chance that if you're even a casual music fan, you've heard, streamed, or even purchased something that he's done. As a songwriter in the early 1960s, he co-wrote such classics as I Want Candy, My Boyfriend's Back, and Sorrow. As a producer, he oversaw classic albums by Blondie, The Go-Go's, Richard Hell, The Raveonettes, and The Dum Dum Girls, among many others. He co-founded Sire Records in 1966 with Seymour Stein, and 30 years later, he co-founded The Orchard with Scott Cohen. Now owned by Sony Music, that company is one of the world's largest distributors of independent music. At 82 years old, Richard, who's originally from the Bronx, as you'll hear, still comes into the Orchard's East Village offices every day and continues to work as a producer, most recently recording new versions of a pair of songs he recorded with blues rock singer Jeffrey Gaines in the 80s. He re-recorded those songs to protest the recent overturning of Roe v. Wade and the sad state of gun control in the United States. Now, we didn't cover all of those topics in the conversation you're about to hear, but we covered a lot of them. So sit back and enjoy Strictly Business.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001 SOC 2 and more, saving you time and money. Unify your security program management and streamline security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, FlowHealth, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and improve security in real time. Access Vanta's free suite of resources to scale your governance, risk, and compliance program at vanta.com/special. That's vanta.com/special.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back to Variety's Strictly Business with Richard Goddard.
Just to start off, what was the original idea and the original inspiration for starting this?
Like all good things, they happen by accident. You know, you think that a person goes into a venture and says, I'm going to do this, and it's going to be the greatest thing in the world, and we're going to make so much money. We had a small record label. It was called Soul 3 Records, S-O-L, Third Planet from the Sun, the Earth. Corny, but true. And we had some artists that we had put out. Distribution for independence in those days was not so simple, you know.
CDs and cassettes mostly at that stage, right? Vinyl was phasing out.
Vinyl, it was CDs mostly.
Right.
I would say CDs. Yeah. So we had some computers before broadband, and we had a few people working there. You mentioned Daryl. And we would go on the nascent internet and see if we could find somebody writing something about the type of music that our bands were making, and then we communicate with them, blah, blah, blah. We just go back and forth, and not a lot happened. However, we discovered that there were two record stores on the internet, and those record stores were Music Boulevard and a place called CD Now, not CD Baby, CD Now. We contacted them. Of course, we needed outlets for our content. And we were told they couldn't take it because they weren't really record stores. They were virtual fronts that were supplied by a back-end supplier. What we realized then was that it was mostly major label content or labels that already had a history, but independents had no opportunity to get onto these stores. So we found out who to contact, Scott Cohn and I. The company was started by myself and Scott Cohn. And we flew to Sacramento and had a meeting with them and told them that we would bring them all the independent music in the world that we had access to, because we saw there was no independence on the stores. And, they talked to us, but we're going to get to this later. They thought, Richard, that's a really good idea, but can you tell me what it was like at CBGB's? What was Blondie like? What were the Go-Go's like? What was the Brew Building like? What? We spent an hour or two talking about this, and the next thing was, Richard, you're one of us. We'll do this deal with you.
And when did you guys start transitioning to streaming?
So we started thinking digital. What could digital mean? And as we started digging in deeper and deeper and talking to people, we put a clause in the contract that said, we'll distribute your records to the internet stores, and you also give us the right to sell, store, and deliver your content digitally. It worked out well. By the time iTunes opened, this was 4 or 5 years before iTunes, we had about 150,000 tracks. So when we signed on to iTunes, we were among the largest suppliers initially.
Were you one of the first, if not the first, to do that?
I think so.
Right. How did you transition from the model once you established yourselves with downloading? How did you then transition to streaming? How was your company set up for that? Because physical product was not bringing in what it once was. Yeah. Downloads were plummeting in value. How did you transition to streaming?
The thing about The Orchard was, as long as an operation was legitimate, meaning the download, whatever organization was, we would associate with, as long as they could pay, because we were protecting our artists, not just running our business, but protecting our artists. And when Spotify came along, and there was a formula for associating and paying per stream, some people think it's too little, some people think it's okay. You know, if you're a massive artist, it's okay. If you're a small artist, it's too little, mm-hmm. you know, but whatever. The thing is, we continued to use the vision that we had for The Orchard in the beginning. Just keep your eyes open. What's in the process? Analyze it. If they're able to make music available in some form throughout the world and sign an agreement and are legitimate and can pay so we can protect and pay the artists and labels that sign up with us, we're going to expand. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Let me ask you one more thing about the business, though, because you mentioned BTS, and they've gone on to another label.
Yeah.
When you lose a big client, I guess they would be a client, when you lose someone like that, does it hurt the company, or do you have enough content and enough other artists as it is so that you just kind of absorb it?
Yeah, we have enough content, and the truth is that The Orchard wasn't built on hits.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. It's wonderful. BTS, for me, it's great. That they did great, and I'm happy for them. I'm more amazed by the fact that people were singing along with them in Korean language. Okay? So, they move on. It's business. That's all. We, obviously, that's a bit of a loss of revenue, but our revenue was always constant from our catalog and from adding more labels and doing more and more things. And of course, like I said, there are others that sell. But I think the thing that makes The Orchard really powerful is it succeeded, it was built on and succeeded on without the need to depend on that as your means of staying alive.
Mm-hmm. Just one thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm, it's a shame they left, but they obviously got a better deal.
Let's go all the way back. How did you get your start in music? When did it first become clear that you were gifted with music or had a talent for it?
I never thought I was gifted.
Okay.
That's the first thing. but okay. So, where it started, I go back, I tell these stories. I mean, obviously, I was grown into the, I was born, I'm now, I may sound like I'm 35, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit older. I was born into a generation after World War II, which, of course, the generation Z that we call today knows nothing about, mm-hmm. I'm sure. But I was born into that, and that generation, as it came to its teenage years, America was the hero of the world then. So we were prosperous as hell, and radio was developing, and a new musical feeling was coming, and the mixture of cultures was coming. And there was a particular disc jockey in New York called... He came from Cleveland, which is why the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is there. Mm. Alan Freed. And I would listen on this newfangled thing called a transistor radio that my parents got me. I put it under my pillow. Hey, you sleeping, Richard? Yeah, I'm sleeping. But I'd be listening to Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters. He'd be playing. He's playing things that I never heard. But I did know a bit about it because I had been interested in jazz before. Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller, you know, that kind of thing. I knew the Ink Spots, you know. So I had an inkling of doo-wop, and I would listen to all these things. And I had been a piano player. I had classical piano lessons. So I had a piano. So I would try to mimic it. Right? And then along comes Elvis Presley and a piano-playing fool, Jerry Lee Lewis. So I say I can do that. And I'm writing songs on the piano. You know? I lived in an apartment that was on the slope of a hill. It was on the second floor, but I would leave the windows open. And one day a guy leans in the window and says, "Hey, kid, that's pretty good." So I said, "Oh, you shouldn't be looking at my window." He said, no, that's good. And he tells me his name. He was a songwriter from the Tin Pan Alley days. For me, an older guy, for all I knew, he could have been 30. He probably was 50, but I don't know. But the point is, he says, "Would you like to make a record? I think I can get something going for you." I said, "I have to ask my father." And I went through this and we met him and everything. And it was my first experience. I went down to the Brill Building and I met some people. And I'm trying to think if we made some demos.
How old were you?
I must have been 14 or 15. 14. Yeah,
okay.
15.
Wow.
But by the time I was 16, I was playing the piano, writing, playing. I learned to play Boogie Woogie and played the St. Louis Blues. W.C. Handy was my idol, you know. And I actually studied all this stuff. And I write a song named after the song that I loved to Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire. My song was called "I'm on Fire." And I get it done. So I'm telling you this just now. So put that to the side. So I write the song. And I put it to the side. Later on, I go to college. I forget all this rock and roll crap, you know, because I get back into jazz because I'm becoming intellectual, learned, a learned man. And I forget this rock and roll crap until I'm sitting there like with you, we're sitting here talking. I'm having lunch and some guy comes over to me and says, "I want to introduce you to somebody." And he introduces me to someone whose father owned parking lots, but just bought a record division for some reason called Seven Arts. Seven Arts, I forget the other name. And then there were people down there. I went down, started writing songs for them. They recorded me, and we put something out, okay? And it got me back into the business. I graduated college, went to law school. After a year, I started getting off the D train from the Bronx at 7th Avenue, which is 7th Avenue and 53rd Street, which you walk down, 49th was the Brill Building, 1650 was 51st Street. And I started writing songs. I was introduced to somebody who would send me to different places to play songs for people, and I would go and play them for them. And one time while I was visiting this publisher that was sending me out on assignments, there were two other guys sitting there as well. And we were waiting and we were waiting and we were waiting. And nobody showed up to, "Oh, no, he's busy now. He's busy." "Eh, hell with this. Do you write? What do you do? What do you do?" "Hey, I know it is a piano. Let's go write a song." And that was Bob Feldman and Jerry Goldstein. And Bob and Jerry and I formed something called FGG Productions. And we got signed to a publishing house, Roosevelt Music,
where we wrote songs on assignment. We wrote songs for people. We learned to make demos. That's how we learned to do everything. Mm-hmm. And eventually, we left there, went to work for the beginning. And here's Sony. Boy, they come around all the time in this story. CBS, mm-hmm. April Blackwood. We were the first songwriters signed to April Blackwood Music. And we write a bunch of songs, and it's all on one contract. One of the songs was called My Boyfriend's Back. Mm-hmm. Well, by that time, we already knew how to produce. Well, the publisher wanted to try to give it to a group, the Shirelles, which, okay, I could understand it. They were huge at the time. We said no. We left our job there where we were getting $75 a week each and an office. That was a lot of money in 1963. Mm-hmm. Left it. Opened up Poor Ourselves, made the record ourselves. And in 1650 Broadway, passed it around, met people, and made a deal with Smash Records. And record came out. 4 weeks later, it was number one. That was it. And we were off and running as producers.
We'll be right back with Strictly Business.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Welcome back to Variety's Strictly Business with Richard Goddard.
Can you describe what the atmosphere was like at the Brill Building at that time? It's legendary, you know, they're all sort of cliched stories we've heard. What was it actually like? And was it in the Brill Building or was it usually across the street at 1650, I think you said?
It was both. It was in the Brill Building. It was in 1650 Broadway, which was in the middle of the block between 7th Avenue and Broadway on 51st Street. And there were companies on 1697 Broadway, which is now where David Letterman was, Ed Sullivan Theater was.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what it was like, if you were a songwriter and not affiliated with a publisher, you could write your songs and you could walk through the buildings and knock on doors and say, I got a song for this. And independent publishers would listen to it, you know, and if they liked it, they'd give you like a $50 advance and take an option for 6 months to see if they could get an artist to record it. Because what it was like was the publishers had the relationship with the A&R men. And in the bigger firms, like where we wound up at Roosevelt or April Blackwood, or in the days of Nevins and Kirshner, Alden Music, Don Kirshner and Al Nevin, who had this writing community, and we were part of that at Roosevelt, and artists would come in looking for songs. So if you had a hit record, they would say, oh, so-and-so is looking for a song. And you would listen to their record and you would write something you felt would fit them.
Mm-hmm.
So as a songwriter, you were really honing your craft. And you could actually walk from place to place. If you were fortunate enough to be signed to a publishing company who paid you, you know, in advance every month, every week, and gave you a small office or a keyboard to sit at 5 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So you would take a legal pad and you'd go in and you just write.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was.
Was there a clear point where you left Sire Records and became an independent producer?
Yeah.
When was it?
It was probably 76, 77,
mm-hmm.
after we signed the Ramones.
Mm-hmm.
The Ramones were fine. I mean, that came to us through a guy that I had found that was working for Sire, Craig Leon.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig found the Ramones, worked on that first record and stuff. And I guess I just was tired of it and wanted to get back into just producing and people paying me to produce.
Mm-hmm.
So I left, but I got involved. Marty Thau got me involved in, said, come down to CBGB's. Things are happening there. And that's where I met Blondie, Robert Gordon, Richard Hell,
mm-hmm.
and the Voidoids. But I started making records that were more to my feeling of independence and roots.
Did you record Heart of Glass with Blondie? Did you
no.
try it during this?
They wouldn't do it. They
Why?
Wouldn't do it. It was there. It wasn't called Heart of Glass. They called it their disco song.
Right.
Yeah. I wanted to do it badly. But truthfully, changing the lyric, calling it Heart of Glass, made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Mike Chapman, you know, added the element that I might not have added.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was maybe a little more technical.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have stuck with the drums without a click track or something, you know.
Right. What was the lyric change?
Oh, it wasn't called Heart of Glass.
What was it called?
It was called a disco song. And was that a love? It turned out to be a pain in the ass. And when you go on further, when I get involved with the Go-Go's.
Well, they were a
Do
punk
you
want
to know them? They were a punk group.
Mm-hmm.
But they already had 40,000 people that bought their punk version of We Got the Beat,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Did you see the potential there to make them into more of a pop group? Because they were genuine L.A. punks, all of them.
I saw, if you were going to bother to get involved with me, you would have to have known that I knew how to make records and I cherished the song. So how do you make a record getting the best out of a song so that people might be interested in it? And that was all, really. So I would help them and say, you know, you ought to slow it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you play the instruments, but let me help you make what you play a little bit better. Kathy, when you, and I talked to her about this, I said, you know, just listen to what the bass drum's doing. Play the exact same thing. I said, don't go doom, 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 doom against it. Go doom, doom, doom. That's all. Do it with it so you have a bigger bottom. And then, you know, the guitars, Charlotte and Jane. I don't know. Let me get you a better guitar. You play a Strat and you play a Telecaster. And the two of them make a more interesting sound. You know, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So putting that together, but they played every instrument. They might have resisted a bit when I would change the beats or slow them down. And the truth is that when we finally mixed the record, they went home. And I get a call from Miles Copeland, who I don't know if he, I can't remember if he threatened to kill me or beat me up because, and he was a black belt karate. And, you know, and he was managing them and he had IRS records.
Yeah.
And he said, you took a punk group and you made them pop. I said, well, it's not really pop. Listen to pop music today. It's sort of a variation. And, you know, eventually they put it out. And the girls didn't speak to me for 6 months. They were like shattered because they were punk girls.
And that was Strictly Business with Richard Goddard. Tune in next week for more from Variety's Strictly Business.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.